Hello, Coffee House Shops listeners. My name is Freddie Gray, and I edit The Spectator's US edition. I know you're all huge Westminster enthusiasts, but Brexit is over, and the big story of 2020 is going to be the American election. So I would like to urge you all to listen to my Americano podcast, where we discuss everything that's going on in Trump world and Democrat world. If you go to spectator.co.uk/Americano, you can listen to it all.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So there are reports recently that the Treasury is considering ending fuel duty freeze in the upcoming budget in order to raise more money. Katie, what's the story here?
So we have a new Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, but the same challenges in many ways in terms of what the Tories want to get from their first budget. We had expected a revenue-raising budget under Sajid Javid. I understand that's still something that they see as a good idea in the first year of a government. In a way, you get your unpopular measures out now, and then over the next couple of years, voters forget, or if they don't forget, they forgive you before you go back to the polls. One of the things that kept Sajid Javid, I suppose, quite tightly control over what he could do with his spending rules that limit borrowing. Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson might revise those, but even if they do, I think we are expecting a few revenue-raising measures in this budget. So what could they be? We've had a mansion tax touted that has received an angry backlash. Mm-hmm. Let's look at pension tax cut relief. And now in the papers this week, there's a report that it could actually be a hike in fuel duty for the first time in a decade. Now, the story is first in The Sun, and they say in The Sun that it's Dominic Cummings who is looking at doing this. I think with all budget stories, you have to take them with a slight pinch of salt, because one of the rules is you don't really deny them either way ahead of a budget. And also there's a sense that everything is on the table and you look at everything all at once. Already, though, you have seen several Tory MPs going public to say that this would be a bad idea. I think were they to do this, so the argument for doing something like this is you have COP26, the climate change conference, yeah, coming up this year, and you also have the Tories making this commitment to net zero for 2050. So in a way, at some point, that is going to affect car use, and this would link to that. But on the other hand, if you look at the Tories' new electoral base, I think that if you look at these red wall seats, I think this is an area where this would potentially be very unpopular. And I think it comes back to, what is the theme of this budget going to be? Because there is a sense, and I think that you can actually, doesn't really take Sherlock to work this out, but if you want to get a sense of what the budget is going to be like, you should in a way just look at the Tory manifesto. And there is a big focus there on delivering for the North and the Midlands and this level up agenda. Now, what the so-called mansion tax was doing was, in theory, taxing southerners, perhaps traditional Tory base, and then putting that money up in other areas of the country, which the Tories feel have been left behind, have not advanced at the same level. I think that the interesting thing, if you were to do the fuel tax, is that I don't think it quite fits in terms of South helping the North. And I do think that, at the moment, I think it's going to be one of the themes of this budget.
Look, I think as Katie said in her article the other day, one of the questions is, you know, how much are you going to raise revenue from the South to fund, you know, obviously the system does this already, but are you going to go and try and raise extra revenue from the South to spend essentially in crude terms on the North? I think there is an odd paradox at the moment, and fuel duty sums it up, which is this government is talking about, you know, banning the sale of all petrol, diesel and even hybrid cars, new cars, from 2035, or Grant Shapps is suggesting maybe even 2032. Yet, if you look at the reaction to this idea that fuel duty might be raised, you see massive pushback. I don't think Westminster or the electorate have quite computed how dramatic the pledge to get to net zero by 2050 is. I think the other thing is this, which is why I would personally be surprised just from the budget, is Boris Johnson has made a big deal of trust. You know, or he knows he needs to show that he can be trusted. And in the election campaign, he did go quite far in terms of saying that he had no plans to to raise fuel duty. I also suspect that, you know, that sometimes a story can change reality, if you know what I mean. That, you know, the backlash gets going and then people then think, oh, no, that's not a good idea. I think the other problem of this is, and again, it comes back to this point about banning the sale of new petrol, diesel or hybrid cars by 2035 or even 2032, is it is one thing to do this once you've put a kind of electric car charging infrastructure in place that basically minimises the level of inconvenience it will pose to people. It's quite another to do it when people don't feel that the state has done that. Now, if you were in a situation where public transport had been radically improved and therefore people felt they needed, had less need for their car, then I think that things would be very different. I was up in the West Midlands yesterday for a piece I'm doing on the election there, and what I think is what I was struck by was that, you know, one of the big divides, so in and around Birmingham, the public transport is really good. You can get around without a car quite feasibly. The further out you get into the Black Country, the more that when you talk to voters there, one of the things that enrages them is that Birmingham is trying to create a car-free central zone. So these people are like, well, how are we meant to get into Birmingham with that? And so I think this is going to be a kind of big political issue. How do you deal with this desire for to cut carbon emissions and cleaner air, balanced against the feelings of people who don't live in places where they have easy public transport links into these places? You know, I mean, I think it is worth remembering that whatever other issues might have injected themselves into it over time, the initial trigger for the Gilets Jaunes protest in France was Emmanuel Macron saying, right, we've got the Paris Climate Change Agreement now, so France is going to lead the world and we're going to increase the cost of motoring in an attempt to deal with that.
Katie, on that green theme, I mean, the clock is ticking down to 2050. The government now has a majority. Do we expect this budget to have more details about how the government really is going to meet that target, and in terms of public transport or, you know, green taxes, that sort of thing?
I think there are going to be some signs of this, and I think the government does want to show it's taking the environment seriously. But the thing about a target like 2050 is some way to go. So I think there'll be more immediate things. And again, I mean, the Tories are not, actually, I shouldn't say the Tories are not going to be in power in 2050. They could well be power in 2050, but I would expect...
They say that Grant Shapps won't be Transport Secretary in 2050.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you expect there will be some gap, at least. And ultimately, the people talking about these things now are not going to be the ones being held to account in the Commons on these issues. So it will be a theme, but I suspect it won't be the main theme. I think the main theme of this budget is going to be, we want to keep these voters who lent their vote to us during the election, and this is how we plan to do it, and potentially at the cost of some other voters, because I still think that there is a sense, if the government makes this a very, in a way, a happy news budget, a budget which mainly has things to please, I think that will suggest that they're not actually being as radical as they could be, because they have an 80-seat majority, and traditionally you would use the first budget to try and raise revenue. If they don't do that, I think that'll be quite curious and perhaps suggest that they don't want to, or they're not willing to be bold enough to actually ruffle any feathers. I think it'll be strange if they don't upset anyone with this budget.
Now, James, Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak, the new Chancellor, met earlier this week at Chevening to talk about that new budget. We now know it's going to be on March 11th for sure. What can we expect to be in it? I mean, the mansion tax seems to be out of the window and fuel duty is only a rumour. Do we know anything else about it?
I think the risk of repeating myself, I think where Katie is undoubtedly right is this this budget is going to be about the manifest.
I don't mind you saying I'm right many times.
We should put that as a pre-roll to this podcast.
Everyone laughed the other day when Boris Johnson that call and response with his cabinet about the manifesto pledges. And you know, yes, it did make for slightly cringe-worthy TV. But there is a serious point here, which is, you know, this number 10 strategic view about how you deal with the issue of trust in politics generally, and also, you know, Boris Johnson showing he can be trusted personally, is to set him out, you know, going through the manifesto saying, well, we said we would do this and we've done that. And that, I think, is the best way to understand this budget, is to basically go back and get out your well-thumbed copy of the Tory manifesto from the last election, which everyone said, oh, it doesn't have very much in it. It actually has rather more in it than you think, when you go through it in a kind of, you know, line-by-line way.
Now, Katie, Jeremy Corbyn has been asked about his future and whether or not he would stay in the shadow cabinet come the next Labour leader. He said that he would serve in any way helpful. So would any coming leader actually want Jeremy Corbyn in the shadow cabinet?
I think if you listen to any hustings, it seems as though they would. I mean, for all the talk of, or even not even the talk, for the fact that Labour suffered one of, you know, historically bad election result, there's been very little criticism of Jeremy Corbyn, notably little. Mm. Rebecca Long-Bailey gave him 10 out of 10. I think Emily Thornberry at least made sure that of her various out of 10s, the one on winning elections was quite low. She's now at the race, however, which probably tells you something. Keir Starmer is doing his absolute best to try and pitch himself closely to Corbyn's agenda. And if you look at the candidate Lisa Nandy, again, praising Corbyn in many ways. So, yes, I think they would probably offer him a place, most of them. And I think for all the things they say, you can see why. He might not need a place, because so much of the Corbyn agenda, if you listen to what everyone's saying, it doesn't feel as though the next leader right now is going to be able to break away too much from the Corbyn project. Perhaps bit by bit, and maybe that's what they need to do to get to a point of winning this contest, but it does feel as though we're not going to have Corbynism in the next Labour leader, but we will have something quite close to it.
James and Katie, thanks very much.